Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. A horrific tragedy on our roads where speed, alcohol, drugs or mobile phone use, this was pointed out by the judge, were not factors in the tragedy. It was the knocking down on the killing of an 8-year-old boy, Andre Ladero. And Andre's father, Cesar, is on the line. Cesar, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And I know you're counting the days. I know that I saw one piece where you were up to 548 days since the horrific tragedy.
Yes, until a result came from the courts. Yeah. Yes.
Tell us above all about Andre, 8 years of age.
So I think that's for every parent, having the first child, it's just life-changing, in fairness. So, and Andrea was just that, okay, so like for everyone. He was just a great boy. He had hugs like no one else, gives hugs and his kisses and his smile. And he was always there, okay? He knew when you needed help, he knew the other ones, okay? He was always there, ready for everyone.
And the morning at which he was killed, he even said to you, because he was on his bike, and he said to you, Dad, can I go on ahead and press the button for the green man?
Yeah, so we cycle a lot. So people that know us from here, okay, we have been living here for a few years now, and people would see us going back and forth to whatever we were going. And yes, so he was used to cycle a lot, okay, on the road, on the path. Yeah. He knew what to do. I was there. He was never alone, okay? Mm-hmm. We never let him just go on his own, but we always fight the bike with him, myself or my wife, okay, Andrea's mom. And yeah, on that day, he just asked, oh, can I go ahead just to press the signal? And I don't know if he's my guardian angel. He's probably my son's guardian angel for sure on doing that.
So we pressed the button. You arrived and the green man still hadn't appeared. So as we all do, you pressed it again.
Exactly. So, we didn't press straight away. Okay. Yeah. So we were chatting. Okay, because he went ahead. He was just like 5 meters away from me. Yeah. Okay, on the way there, and he pressed it, and we were chatting. Okay, about what was going to happen. Okay, he was going to a star camp, summer camp. Okay, they both were, him and my other son, Tomas. And they were really excited because it was a show on that day and they had been rehearsing and all of that. Okay. So they were, yeah. Yes, so we arrived there, we were chatting, and I just asked him, did you press it? I pressed it again, like you were saying, Joe. Yeah.
And it went green. And where did this, I don't know whether to call them a van or a truck. They're these new, they're a big phenomenon in Ireland now. They're double crew cabs. They're called, well, the main one that people know is the Ford Ranger Wildtrak. They're the biggest selling vehicle in the United States of America. So we know them from our TV program. Double crew cab with an open back. And they weigh significantly more than your normal family car. I think they're looking up this morning, I think they weigh up to double. When did you spot the vehicle?
Only when I was starting to cross. So Andrea was in front of me, okay? He was already in the middle of the zebra, the crossing, okay?
Yeah.
And I was just starting to cross it, okay? When I look back, so I look back because the traffic light gets red for the cars, and I'm seeing the traffic light, okay, because I'm behind Andrea. Andrea is in front of me facing the signal or facing the crossing. And I'm behind him, okay? And I just say behind him because the path there is not wide enough for us to be like the two bikes. I have the trailer connected to my bike where Tomáš was
the baby,
so I just so I just left a bit more space for people to pass. Okay. Mm. And I was starting to cross, so I never saw it coming, okay? I never hear it coming. There was no sound, no marks, nothing, okay?
Yeah.
Just saw my son disappearing and hearing that loud bang.
That's your, and that is your memory, Cesar, Andre disappearing.
Andre disappeared, yes. He was not projected, he never, yeah. So it's, you probably cannot imagine, but yeah, when you see in films and all of that, because it's interesting that now every single film that we try to watch has something like this.
Yeah. And when did you realize there had been an impact? Now, again, this man, John Moynihan, was travelling at 37k in a 50k zone. Now, he did break a red light and failed to yield at a pedestrian crossing, but there was no, according to the court, no speed, alcohol, drugs, or mobile phone use. So did the car screech to a halt, Cesar?
No. I really thought that that Ford Ranger was going to vanish, okay? Yeah. With my son in front of it, okay? Because my son continued to be in front of it, okay?
Yeah.
My son slipped to the side and, he lay down on the road and the van continued, okay? A few more meters.
And when did you realize Andre wasn't killed instantly, but when did you realize this was a catastrophic situation?
So, unfortunately, my mom also suffered a similar accident, okay?
Yeah.
With a smaller car, in fairness, yes. And she survived. So, on that moment when all of that happened in front of me, I just thought, you're stronger, you're younger.
Yeah.
So everything will be okay. And mommy is here, and mommy will take care of you for now, and help is on the way, okay? So, no, I never realized any of that, okay? Not as my wife, okay? Until I'm inside the ambulance, in fairness.
And your wife?
So my wife, she's a nurse, okay? Yeah, she worked in a pediatric intensive care unit before we came to Ireland. Yeah. And she knows, okay? She examined him straight away. She was in shock, of course, like I was.
Yeah.
But she knew how he was and the severity of his injury. Okay, that was nothing was visible. Okay, he was only there, breathing. But he was breathing, so I had hope.
Of course,
hope. Yeah.
And then Andre was obviously transferred to obviously a hospital, Cork, and then to Temple Street in Dublin.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Did you speak to the driver at the scene? Or did
Never.
He speak to you?
When the ambulance crew was picking up Andrea and putting him in the, how do you call it, trolley? I'm not sure the name. My wife wanted to just go there, and myself and our friend just hold her and we just said, Andre is our priority.
Yeah.
I don't. Never. Never, ever. Yeah.
Because as you know, and I want to come back especially to Andre and your own reaction and the unfathomable grief that nobody could nobody could see the depths of the grief that you're now in. But this man was 62, John Monaghan. He's driving these, and I say they're perfectly legal. They're legal as cars, but they are trucks. And the judge alluded to this. And they're big, big trucks. And I haven't been in one, but I noticed them on the road. I also noticed that if you, the VRT can be lower on them. If it's a double crew cab, which they all have a double crew cab, you can say, well, legitimately, that it's for work or for carrying builders or whatever. They weigh up to 3.5 tons unladen. 3.5 tons. Your average family car would be about half that. They have, and people can look them up there on YouTube, the Ford Ranges. That's the one involved. They're a whole genre now of vehicle, very popular in Ireland. It looks like there's built-in bull bars to them. The bonnet is extremely high off the ground. The whole vehicle, and that's one of the appeals. Well, one of the appeals of it in the States is the big wide open roads and countryside, and they become extraordinarily, I say, they're the biggest selling vehicle in the United States for the last half century. And the judge made reference to the fact that these new vehicles which are on the road, are people aware of the power of them? Even when they are within, as the judge said, you were within the speed limit. But that child or any child or any pedestrian is extraordinarily vulnerable when a 3.5 ton truck, and I know you don't need a truck license to drive it, impacts you. And when we got to Temple Street Hospital, Cesar, was there any, in those 5 days, was there any hope?
So Temple Street knows how to deal with parents, okay? And they give you hope because they don't know the case in full, okay? Or they were aware of the case in full, okay? The Dublin and Cork Hospital, they were always in contact, apparently, because there is no pediatric unit here emergency, okay? Or ICU in Cork. Incredible. But yes, so they were always in contact. And what we hear is that we have received cases like this, okay? So hope, yes. Until the end, there is always hope. And we have seen an overturn of things like this, okay? Until the last scan is performed.
Yeah. And they made it clear in that scan that this looked like it would be the final scan that Andre was going to go.
Yeah. So in between these days, you can only imagine, okay, and hopefully this image don't stay with you, but Andrea's head is swelling all these days on. Okay, his body is perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
His organs are perfect. All his functions are working with the help of keeping him alive and ventilated and all of that. But his head is not him anymore.
Yeah.
But the staff were just incredible there. Yeah.
And I'm also thinking of Thomas, who was there right with you.
Tomas saw this in the first row. And on that moment, we didn't realize he was there. Only a few minutes after, 2 minutes after, we realized that Tomas is there. And he's not screaming, he's not asking for help. So he's inside the trailer of our bike, and he's just staring at us.
Saw everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you did donate Andre's organs.
when the right moment arrived for that question to be asked, yes. Yes, we said yes, and that was Andrea's choice, in fairness.
Okay.
Andrea went to the Cork Summer Show, in 2022, and since we were there, he kept a cue ring that he received during the Cork Summer Show in one of the sands that was organ donation, but they didn't want to tell him what that was about.
Yeah.
When we were coming home, he still remembered that cue ring, and he just asked me, and I explained him briefly what it is, and he kept it in his backpack, all the time.
What a boy. What a boy. Did you, and then what was the court experience like?
Can you repeat, please?
No, what was the experience for you and your wife in court?
If I have to be frank, it was, so André is not here any longer, So André was killed because of the actions of that man, as I said, in court. But the other victims are still here, and they are not taken in account during all this process, Just we were asked if we wanted to do a victim impact statement that we did, both myself and my wife, to honor André. But all this process doesn't take in account these other victims that, physically, we don't have anything from that accident.
Mm.
But,
And John Moynihan, did he apologize?
To us?
Yeah.
Directly? Never. Towards our solicitors? Never. But in court, his barrister said yes. In court, the Gardaí also mentioned that. But never to us.
Mm. And was any explanation given? Did he... Like he wasn't drinking, he wasn't speeding, he didn't have any other or chemicals or whatever in his bloodstream. The car was in good condition, relatively new. Or the truck, sorry. And did he say, "No, I know when you get into one of these trucks, I don't know whether you don't want to get into one of them." Cesar, but the first thing you get in, and I was looking at all the reviews of them this morning by, these various motoring journals, they say to get in is a fantastic experience. You have all these digital screens, you have a big iPad you're obviously we're right hand drive, big iPad to your right, you have a whole screen that comes out, there's loads of digital this and digital that. But it struck me when you got the point of view shot, so to speak, from where the driver was sitting, you're extremely high up. And I don't know if you would, but anyway, the driver didn't offer any of those explanations. I didn't see the child. I didn't see André. There was no explanation given.
There was no explanation given. And I think that anyone, if was with perfect conscience of what it was doing or what people are doing when driving. Even if you didn't see anything, if you hear the loudest bang in front of you, you just press the brakes, Emergency brake. They teach you when you take your license. And did that happen? No. Could that have a different result? We don't know.
Yeah.
But no, it didn't happen anytime. So... as I said in court, for him, my son was only a leaf, and probably he just stopped because his tire got deflated. I'm not sure.
But he didn't offer that as an excuse, did he?
I never heard his voice.
Yeah.
True. Okay.
You never heard his voice?
Yeah. No. The only thing is yes, and I maintain the plead guilty were the words that I heard from his mouth. And I don't need to hear anything, okay? Yeah. I just heard this because I was there in every single session in the court.
Yeah.
I don't need to be there.
Yeah.
Not requested to be there.
And he was sentenced, he will do 2 years, obviously he won't be remission. 2 years in prison and is banned from driving for 6 years. Insofar as any punishment is appropriate in terms of, is adequate in terms of what's happened to dear Andre. What did you think of the punishment?
So I heard the judge talking, okay? So Judge Dermot Sheehan, I heard him speaking and I heard the barrister talking as well, okay? So what the judge did was what is currently in the law, okay? So the law for these cases specifically, okay, that is dangerous driving with the result of killing. Now I don't know exactly the terminology, okay, but it's dangerous driving causing death, okay?
Yeah.
That's the right. Says that the... You can get a prison sentence of up to 10 years, okay?
Yeah.
But it's just these two little words, up to. So you can drive dangerously, killing, and you can have up to. It's not from, okay? It's up to.
Yeah.
So in the end, the judge did what was... In the law and according to his judgment and according to the law. So I cannot say anything else for Andre's case if I feel that that is something that I feel justice. No, okay. Mm-hmm. So the value of my child for the state of Ireland in this case, okay, that he was killed by dangerous driving is... A 2 year sentence. It was one of how do you call it? Sorry.
And his barrister said that on behalf of Mr. Moynihan that he would continue to suffer to the end of his days for what he had done.
And I hope that if he has any religion and all of that, that he continues to suffer after his legs are gone.
You mentioned earlier, Cesar, that you can't even watch a movie now because there's every movie has a car crash of some. What about when you're out and about for yourself or your wife or young Tomas when you see... That's all we see when we're out is cars... moving quickly, invariably. What's that experience like?
So, first of all, we have to cross that section of the road a few times, okay?
Yeah.
But the problem is not only there, okay? There is just, it's a reminder of everything else. So any simple thing that we see on the road that is against the rules, okay, I will call it like this, just make us mad, okay? You cannot imagine how we boil from inside, okay, of seeing someone not stopping in a red light, okay? And this happens, okay? But again, there is no conviction. Guards cannot be everywhere, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not their duty to be everywhere. And thank God we are in the 21st century. And Ireland has a lot of technology to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Just need to use it.
Yeah.
Enforcement needs to happen somehow and can be probably automatic. But for us, my son, okay, Tomas, when he sees someone crossing a controlled pedestrian crossing, okay, with the traffic lights, we have one near our house, okay?
Okay.
He just gets... That man or that woman, they aren't being bad. They are crossing on the red lights, okay? And the problem is that he will know that even his brother crossed on the green light, okay, the green man, and he had the result that he had, okay?
And you mentioned earlier, you said if Mr. Moynihan has religious beliefs, what has been, if anything, of help to you and Felipe, your wife, and Tomás, and indeed your extended family? You mentioned is your mother still alive? Does your mother that was knocked down, I know she survived a car accident.
She survived, and she is off the wheelchair and all of that. Mm. She's very tough, yeah.
Okay. And what has, if anything, has helped Andre's family in those 70 days since? Is there...
No.
Are you religious? Is there... I see people saying that...
I lost my religion on that day.
Okay.
I was religious, okay.
Yeah.
And Andrea had a funeral, her religious funeral, okay, Catholic funeral, okay.
Yeah.
But that was not the last day that I entered the church, but I don't feel that entering a church gives me any hope.
Yeah. So
and I'm there, okay. And I know that different people will consider this different. My sister, she's religious. She prays for him. She continues to go. She feels that he's present somewhere, and that she knows now the angel that will guide her somehow and her family, my parents as well. Okay, not for us.
Okay, yeah, I can understand how incredibly difficult this is, but Cesar, is there, you speaking like this and you talking about so vividly and so movingly about your beautiful, beautiful boy, do you think it might awaken, as you say, the guards can't be everywhere. It's up to every motorist to realise the power of the weapon that they're driving. And I come back to what the judge said about this vehicle. It's not the driver's, the car, Ford Ranger Wildtrak, driven by Mr. Mine. It's not really a car, but a pickup truck. People who drive these vehicles in urban areas where there are lots of houses have an increased burden of care. It is not the same as driving a car. Now, we can only hope that people listening, and we know there can't be a guard, I think that's a very strong, there can't be a guard everywhere, but there is a driver in every car.
Yes.
It's been more and more. Says our deepest, deepest sympathy.
Thank you, Joe.
To you, your wife, Tomás, your family. I'm especially thinking of Cesar's grandmother in Portugal. He was a remarkable young man, as you say. And I know you're very much part of a community in Kinsale and Cork. You work in Ely, Lily in Kinsale, and you're well known for being out cycling and...
Andrea had a touch with people, okay? Andrea would be our PR, okay?
Okay, yeah.
He was that sort of kid, okay?
Okay. But,
it's
a wound. I lost my own brother in a car accident.
Yeah.
He was our youngest. He was 25 when he was killed, and it was not his fault. It is a wound, Cesar, unfortunately, that will never heal. It is a wound that will get smaller over the years, mainly through time, mainly through friends, mainly through your own family. But don't run away, and I know you won't from the way you've spoken today and your willingness to speak. Don't run away from that grief that has befallen you, because it is inestimable. It is so, so deep. God rest Andre, Cesar. Yeah. God rest your little boy. God rest him.
Yeah. Like one of my neighbors said, you have to learn to love to grieve. And yeah, that's been what we have been doing.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Andre, for your wonderful short life and living.
Cheerful.
Thank you, Cesar. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Condolences again. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And thank you again, Cesar. You may have seen there a few weeks ago, didn't get enough coverage here as far as I'm concerned. That was Larry Mullen of U2 talking on an American chat show about his son and dyslexia and the effect it had on his family. Now, here's Larry talking, and he explains in it, listen, I don't normally talk about my family, but I do want to talk about dyslexia.
You know, I knew my son was dyslexic, but I really didn't understand him. And it's difficult in the house, you know, like
two guys
in the house. I was away, coming home, he's acting out, they've got the police at the house. And, I've spent all my career avoiding talking about my family. What happened was I saw this documentary and it hit home, and I kind of felt, okay, I need to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the realising and recognising what I didn't do and what I could have done. So what can I do now?
Yeah.
How can we better understand our kids who are going through these things?
And Leo is in Tala. Leo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You admire that. A lot of people having... I read it and then I listened to it, and my admiration for Larry, it couldn't go up much more because I'm extremely in admiration of him. But it went up. You say we need someone like that in Ireland to get rid of this stigma around dyslexia.
Well, you see, the problem with dyslexia is that it's not terminal insofar as you die from it,
yeah.
But it is terminal insofar as that you live with it for the rest of your life.
Okay. Good point, yeah.
Because I'm 76 now, and I mean, I wasn't dyslexic when I was young. It wasn't until my son, my eldest lad, was in being assessed, then I realised that I was dyslexic. I just couldn't spell at the time. I remember a teacher saying, you write good essays, but your spelling is hopeless, you know.
Wow.
Now, like, you know, with the problem with the Irish exemption thing, I mean, the way I say it is that if you really... I come from a bilingual family. All my kids came up through Irish, and we've 3 out of 5 are dyslexic, but they went through education. The eldest guy is a master's, and he's an advanced paramedic. So it didn't hold them back. But if people really need,
and did they? Well, I know, and that's been one of the areas in Ireland about dyslexia, this exemption from Irish.
Yes, yeah.
Did you apply? Did they get exemption?
No, they didn't. No, they never. They got help insofar as
okay.
That. I remember my middle daughter. She was in a room on her own, and she didn't particularly like it. Funny enough, and whereas she would have preferred, you think, to have taken the chance and just done the exam in the normal way. But the thing about it is, if people need the exemption, I've no problem with that. But don't tell me then that they're going over to do Spanish or French or some other language or German. You know, that doesn't make sense.
Okay.
And this is what's happening at the moment.
Do you think that is the case, that it's been used?
Well, I think it's been abused.
Okay.
I mean, I actually served on the board of the National Executive of Dyslexia Ireland.
Okay.
And, I mean, the thing about it was, like, we worked very hard to get these exemptions and help people. And again, if they're being abused, well, then that's killing the whole point of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say, like, go on.
Yeah, okay, and the department say, well, they have statements out saying the figures have gone up for people seeking and getting exemptions from Irish because of dyslexia, but it's not, they don't regard it as worrying. Katrina Fahey, Katrina, could I stay with us, Leo? Katrina, yes, Fahey, yes. Katrina Fahey, you have dyslexia and your daughter.
Yes.
And what do you think of what Leo said there, that some people are using dyslexia as an excuse to get out of Irish?
I suppose I would disagree with what he's saying. I suppose dyslexia is a language difficulty. And I think my daughter availed of it as soon as she could. At 7, I would have seen dyslexia in her when she was 3. Now, I am a paediatric occupational therapist, so I was very in tune with her difficulties, and very in tune because I knew also that there was a high possibility that she would also be dyslexic, because I am.
Okay.
So I suppose I did avail of it as soon as I could, and she wanted to because I could see her self-esteem, her confidence, her enjoyment of school was really decreasing, and her well-being. So, and like, she was only beginning her journey in education. I knew it was going to be long, and it needs to be. And I availed of it, and it was the best decision that I made. Saw it freed up her headspace. It allowed her to begin to learn and embrace and actually become secure in English.
And what do you think? I don't know whether you heard the clip we played from Larry Mullen, and he was involved in making that that production, the States about dyslexia. He's saying, because I read other things he said in the interview, he said, we didn't fully understand it as parents.
Yeah.
Now, would you say that's true?
Yes,
and wider society, I suppose.
Yeah. I got diagnosed at 14. I would say I went on to do nursing, and then I went on to become an occupational therapist, and I did not embrace it until I was doing occupational therapy. I didn't understand it. I didn't really know. I was just given a label, and that was it. And I think that's what's wrong. I think it's education. We have to be educating and empowering people. I see it. I also actually have a master's in specific learning disability dyslexia, and I do assessments.
Okay.
And I see it in my clinic. People, you know, there's kids are struggling. You know, their self-esteem, their mental health is it's a big problem, and we're all identifying it as a problem.
Yeah.
But like, we need to start supporting these children and enabling them and to make decisions.
Sorry, Joe.
Leo, yes, Leo.
Sorry. I have no problem with children having exemptions from Irish. My children didn't need it. They went to workshops, and I went onto the board of the Dyslexia Association to say thank you for the amount of work they put in. But they put the work in themselves. But my argument is, I heard Joe Munn or Larry Munn talking about the rows he had at home.
Yeah,
we experienced that. And as the chairman of the Tala branch, I remember people coming to us, couples, and were in tears because they end up fighting, trying to help the child from different angles, like a male and a female approach to different things. But the work has not been put in at the school level. I mean, we at that senior level, like colleges and universities, there's help available. If they put the help in down the line at Bunt School, you know, primary schools, they wouldn't need them at the other end, and that's where it's most help. I think if children need it, if a child needs a crutch, you get them a crutch. Now, the thing I object to is that someone get an exemption in Irish and then another language. As that lady said, it's a language difficulty. So, I mean, like, if the help is there, yes, use it, and then you think, but don't abuse it. That's the difference.
So, Katrina, does dyslexia make it difficult for me in every language? Learning every...
I suppose you can't say it's one way for everyone. Like, I've kids that come into me at 15 who once I assess them, they come out as dyslexic, but actually love Irish and are very good at Irish. So it's not a one solution fits all. No, I actually 100% hope that my daughter can learn a second language, and I really want her to experience that. I suppose I know myself I would have done German in school. I would be better at it orally than writing it.
Okay.
And I could kind of understand bits today. But I don't, even if I go to France or go to another country, I don't have confidence exploring that language because I feel I was having the confidence. I didn't have the confidence when I was younger. Okay. I didn't get that instilled in me.
Stay with us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Donna McGrath. Donna, good afternoon. Dyslexia again. As I say, Larry Mullen, in a rare public intervention, but that makes it all the more powerful, I think, talking about dyslexia and how people learnt his own child, people didn't understand, and all the difficulties that can arise. What's your own situation, Donna? Your own situation is your... I can't hear you. That's... I was trying to get you... Okay, now you're... There's something happened with your line there. Okay. Now, we'll ring you back. I'll chat to Leo and Katrina momentarily. Leo, how active is the... You said they were so good to you, the Dyslexia Association. How active are they in Ireland? How do they...
Oh, they practice all over the country. And right. They run classes for teachers so that these can have intervention as early as possible with the children. But they're like, again, we don't have the backing of the government in a real sense. They do make grants towards it. But these courses are available to try and spot it earlier. And if it, like everything, if you get it early enough, it doesn't go away, but it certainly makes life a lot easier. And as that lady said, she tends to consider herself a dyslexic. I consider myself a bilingual dyslexic. And that's the way I feel about it. I've got through life, thank God. But it's always there.
Okay, bilingual. But just guard yourself, Leo. Bilingual dyslexic. Donna, you back with me?
I'm back with you, Dave.
Okay, yeah. What's your situation?
So I'm dyslexic, and I have two of my daughters are dyslexic as well, Joe. So that's my situation. I was diagnosed at about 8 years of age. I have an Irish exemption, and my daughter, who's in sixth class, has an Irish exemption. And my other daughter, who's dyslexic, who's in second class, she's currently still doing Irish at the moment.
Okay, and what is your position on this debate, this accusation that some people are using dyslexia to get out of Irish?
Yeah, well, Joe, I think the situation is that you actually have to be under the 10% when you're going for assessment to see if you're dyslexic or not. You need to be on the level of being under 10% in your reading and your spellings, and that will give you a waiver to get the Irish exemption. So your headmaster, whoever's in the school, decides, okay, this child is under 10%, they're struggling, and this is how they get the exemption. And a lot of people actually don't know it. There is rules to it. Also, now in second class, every child in the country is assessed in the class, and there's a screener to see if they are dyslexic or not. This is a new screener coming in. So this is probably why more kids are being exempt from Irish, because they are being screened. It's more open. People are more open to it. They're more open to go and get assessed for being dyslexic. And this is where the exemptions are coming from. Dyslexic kids need exemptions from Irish purely on the basis of they're going out, if they're learning English, they're going out and they're getting special help in classes with their English. They do not get special help with Irish or any other language in school. It's only the English that they are brought out in small groups if they are dyslexic. So it's not as simply as they're getting all exemptions. It's purely as because people are being screened more now, and it's well more known that people are dyslexic now than what they would have been years ago.
And did it affect you, your dyslexia, did it affect you in your exams, even in what subjects you could take, Donna?
Oh, absolutely. I was doing French right up until the Leaving Cert. And then about 2 weeks before my Leaving Cert started, the teachers just told me, Donna, you just cannot sit French in your Leaving Cert, you're going to fail it.
Wow.
So I wiped that out. I had an Irish exemption I stopped doing Irish in fourth and fifth class, and then from then on up, I didn't do Irish after that. I had my exemption, but I still done French, but I probably had about three or four words, and that's it. It was just knocked then before I sat the Leaving Cert, and it was definitely the right thing. I would have failed it, you know, so... Definitely I think it's a very hard, when we're, dyslexic people are learning English, the teachers take them out, they have specific ways on teaching them, but there's no specific ways on how to teach dyslexic kids different languages. There's no extra help, the schools don't have the teachers to go up and train them how to train Irish for dyslexic or French or Spanish. So we don't have the resources. It's not that dyslexic people can't learn a language. We don't have the resources in this country to go and teach teachers to provide that for the dyslexic kids. So, and a lot of people just don't understand. It's not them.
Yeah. Well, one of the teachers was Hilary Lyons, just recently retired, secondary school, responsibility for students with dyslexia. You're just back from a weekly meeting. Go ahead, your contribution, please, Hilary.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Yeah, a lot of what Donna is it?
Donna, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I can attest to a lot of what Donna's saying there. There is a lot more known about dyslexia now, and just in relation to the Irish, you know, I would have had the experience of parents coming to me and saying my child needs to be exempt from Irish.
Okay.
In the past, what was done was that the parents would bring the child to an educational psychologist, and it was the educational psychologist who made a recommendation that this child, because of the severity of their dyslexia, needs to have an Irish exemption. But I'd say it's about maybe 8 or 9, 10 years ago now, what the department have done is they have devolved all of that to the schools. So it's the schools now that do the testing. So as Donna was saying there, like I was secondary school, as Donna was saying there, by the time a child came into my school, it would be very unlikely that they would be diagnosed. Now, we had it quite a lot, a child diagnosed first, second, third year, even in leaving cert. But they somehow slipped through the cracks. But most, it would have been picked up in primary school. But I don't agree with them. I don't agree with just a blanket exemption, because dyslexia is a spectrum in the same way as autism, you know, is a spectrum. You know, like I've taught dyslexics who had the most amazing language skills, were brilliant readers. They were the lucky dyslexics, but, you know, who just had really poor spelling. But then you have some poor, unfortunate people whose reading is severely impaired. And we know reading is the bedrock of all education, you know. If a young person has difficulty with reading, then, like, every single subject on our curriculum now, you know, you need reading skills for, right down to maths. So, yeah, but it was such a coincidence. I was saying to your researcher, it was such a coincidence that you were dealing with the subject of dyslexia because I was driving home. I have often taken Leaving Cert, 5th years in Leaving Cert, and I have worked on the driver theory test with them.
Okay.
So if you're entitled to a reader, reading assistance, or an individual reader in your Leaving Cert, your Junior Cert and your Leaving Cert, you're also entitled to a reader in your in the driver theory test. And that seems to be the best kept secret in the state. So, you know, I've had the experience of young... It stands to reason. They're called reasonable accommodations. At Junior Cert and Leaving Cert, reasonable, it's race, reasonable accommodation, certificate exams. So it stands to reason that that person would need a reader. But my bugbear, I'd love to go to the RSA, who are based here in Ballina, and just say, can I just rewrite the whole test? The language in it is so difficult. It's so wordy, you know. I don't see the need. I don't see why you couldn't, like the word deceleration there today. Had my the past pupil that I'm trying to help him get through his driver theory test. You know, the word deceleration, acceleration, ascend, descend. You know, go up, go down, speed up, slow down. You know, like I don't think it's rocket science, and you know, I mean, to look at the linguistics of the to examine the driver theory test and say, can we not simplify this, you know, which would make it much more accessible. So on the way home in the car, I was saying, maybe I'll contact Joe Duffy and see if young people are having difficulty with it.
With the with that specifically?
With that issue in particular, yeah.
And yeah. remind people again of what you're entitled to that people don't realise.
If you have what's called reading assistance, so what happens, coming up to the junior cert, the students with dyslexia, not just the students with dyslexia, you know, very often an English teacher will notice, you know, they'll say, oh my God, this child is misspelling all these words, you know, and they'll bring it to the learning support department and they'll have a look at it and go, oh yeah, you know. And so if you have 10% of errors on a paper, and it might be in the mock exams or some assessment, then you can make an application to the State Exams Commission to have this child get a spelling and what's called a spelling and grammar waiver. Or if you feel the child, the young person is having difficulty with reading, then there's a reading test, and it's based on errors or time or both. Then you can apply for reading assistance or an individual reader based on the severity of the young person's reading difficulties or dyslexia. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
if you have that, if you get this reasonable accommodation in the junior cert, you're automatically entitled to it for leaving cert. A lot of the parents of dyslexic students listening in now will relate to this. You're entitled to an automatic reactivation of the accommodation in the leaving cert, but you're also entitled in any state exams the colleges would give it through DARE. You know, it's disability access route to education, but the organisations like the RSA are obliged to give this young person a reader.
They usually
go to, like in this part of neck of the woods now, young people would go to Sligo.
Okay, Eamon. Yeah. Eamon wants to make a quick point. Eamon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I just want to make one point. I fully accept there is a condition called dyslexia, but one of your guests, maybe this interpreter, seems to be suggesting that you wouldn't be able to learn ours because of the condition, but you could go on and learn other languages. And I'm just finding out, surely we're not going to accept that Ireland, unique in the world, has some mysterious problem. And I'd ask the expert to look at the basis of a language, which is sound, right? Sound. And use better teaching methods in Ireland for all languages, including Irish. And certainly people who are deemed to be dyslexic, by all means, decide exempt them or whatever. But to exempt them from one language and then say, oh, you're fine with the other language, is, in my opinion, counterintuitive and complete nonsense.
Okay. Well, you see, this began... go ahead.
I'll just interrupt.
That's
absolutely fine. Like, dyslexics can learn languages, right? But as a dyslexic person, generally, severely dyslexic people like myself, we get a reader. We get a reader when we're sitting down doing the leaving cert, right? So does the Department of Education is struggling even to teach the basic reading skills to dyslexic people, English? Now, if a dyslexic person comes along and tries to do Irish, we need to break that all down and have an Irish reader that comes in and does the exam with us. Then we'd need French.
I agree.
And this all has to be broke down. No, listen to me. All has to be broke down. So in the classes, my daughter, who's in sixth class, goes out 5 days a week, sometimes twice a day, just to learn English. Now, she was doing that with French. It would have to be all broken down. She'd have to go out twice a day for French. She'd have to go out twice a day for Irish. So it is really a lot of pressure that you're putting on dyslexic kids to learn Irish and French and English. Now, that can be their choice, but I do not think the Department of Education are struggling to get SNA teachers into schools, to primary schools, to teach these dyslexic kids English, mind Irish, and mind another language on top of that, and
yes,
all the other subjects they have to do.
Yes, I accept that. In fact, just speak for a second.
Everything you said,
I fully agree with you. In fact, you reinforce what I'm saying, what I said to one of the researchers. My layman's understanding of dyslexia was it was first of all based on inability with text, right?
Okay, yeah.
Would you accept that?
Absolutely.
And that's all I'm saying. But if you accept that, and I was lucky enough to have I have an interest in language. I was doing French, and I had a very good teacher who was Irish, right? And this is years ago, but she was critical of the Irish teachers. She was no longer working the system. She was a freelance. Excellent. And one of her key things was sound, and she called it the phonetic language of any language you're trying to. Some people call it just phonetics. But I can tell you one thing. I'm not going to second guess the experts, but I think the experts look at our methods, right?
Yeah.
Rather than making different rules.
Okay.
Can I just come in there? I was just about to use that word phonetic. The problem with Irish is that it's kind of the least phonetic language of any of the languages taught in Irish schools. Like
you're saying the frequency of it being taught. Yeah, you accept that completely.
My point is that tá, me, ag, dol, go, gi. I mean, when you look at those, are you know on. And will to gamma, you know, when you look at those words written down,
it doesn't.
You know, that's phonetically, it's an extremely complex language.
Can I interrupt there? To me, you've touched on the essence, but the essence of what I'm talking about, but you don't seem to accept the premise I'm saying. If you've been taught properly in the phonetics of Ireland, you will be able to reproduce the sound. Sound.
Yeah.
I've only done that. I think it was junior cert up to Irish, good and bad and all as it was. But if I look for an Irish word today, I don't understand it, but I can make the sound because I've internalised the phonetic language of the sound.
The dyslexic learner hears that differently, Eamon, and sees it differently.
And I am not and will not argue against the condition exists. So I am not actually suggesting any different approach to dyslexic. But if you are dyslexic, you'll have the same problem with Irish and any other language. Irish is not unique.
That was the second point I was about to make. If you have an Irish exemption in an Irish secondary school, you are also entitled to an exemption from MFL. So that's modern foreign languages. Some schools make it mandatory, you know, that you have a European language, French, Spanish, whatever it is, German. But if you're, and certainly for going on to third level, you're entitled to that exemption from having the second language, having the European language, if you have an Irish exemption as well. You have an exemption from all languages.
And I think you'll agree that nothing I said is contrary to that position.
Okay.
No, hang on
there a second. I need to take a break. Good, Emile, I'm all good.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Stephanie, an interesting point on the dyslexia debate. Go ahead.
I know that the exemption is provided for children who have dyslexia, but also all kinds of neurodiversity.
Okay.
And the exemption just allows you to not use the exam towards your university points. So that means that children can have the exemption, but with the support of the school, can still attend classes if that's suitable for them. They can be exposed to the language, they can learn with their classmates, even if the level at which they learn is not necessarily going to reach the point that taking a Leaving Cert examination is appropriate. So I know for my children who have exemptions, one of them has now finished taking the classes because he's in his Leaving Cert years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another child who's coming up to secondary school, and he's going to continue with his Irish learning all the way to 16, even though he does have the exemption. So with the support of his school, he can still be exposed to the language, and because that's suitable for him. It's not suitable for everyone, of course.
Yeah. But the Irish Times figures apparently said up to, which began this debate, that the department challenged them. But the Irish Times figures say that in 2000, 2% got exemptions, and in 2024, 13% got exemptions. Now, the department figures go from 2018 to 24. They say it went from 6% to 7%, and they say even then you had to take into account 18,000 students from Ukraine have enrolled in the.
Yeah.
So are the exemptions, Sean O'Hargan is a former Gaelic school principal, are the exemptions going up, Sean?
I think they're rocketing, Joe, and I was president of Gaelic Docus. We were making this point consistently over the last number of years. Pádraig O'Dea, Dr. Pádraig O'Dea in the Forest Tide out in St. Pat's College has done a huge amount of work on this. You know, the reality is, as far as I'm concerned, this is the introduction of the taking away of compulsory Irish by stealth. And there are a small number of very genuine cases. Some of them have been outlined today. But I do think one of the most important figures is that 80% of people with exemptions are taking a foreign language to Leaving Cert level. Uh-huh. Now, linguistically, that makes no sense.
Where are those stats coming from? I don't doubt them, Sean. You're an expert.
No.
You say 80% of those who are getting exemptions
are taking a modern European language for their Leaving Cert. And, you know, the reality is here, and you know, I think one of the points that was made there about Irish being particularly phonetically difficult. In fact, people like Pádraig O'Dea and internationally, people would say one of the hardest languages to learn from scratch is the English language because of the huge number of exceptions that there are in the language. Yeah. Words like though, T-H-O-U-G-H, Joe, exist in the English language.
Yeah, and
tell me how that works phonetically. And I was a learning support teacher for 10 years dealing with children with dyslexia, and I saw the real difficulties they had with English as well as Irish, but nobody's suggesting that they have an exemption from English.
And even, you know, even the number of silent letters in the English language.
Absolutely.
Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just listening to those car ads there. Did Joe, again, to go back to that horrific case of the road death of young Andre, and the judge said double crew cabs trucks, which are so popular in Ireland now, Ford Rangers, the one in case, they come in at 41,500, which is comparatively, but if you want a double crew cab, do you know how much extra you'll pay to get a double crew cab? £300. And as the judge said, they're not really a car, but a pickup truck, and a very powerful and a very heavy 3.5 tonnes. Sinead, good afternoon. Irish and phonetics.
Come on,
okay.
Come on.
Comment ça va? Oui, oui. Je comprends.
And comment ça va is comment ça va. So I'm just muting the point that French is more phonetic than Irish.
Okay.
There's more silent letters in French than there are in Irish. So both my children, I've raised them through Irish. I live in County Clare.
Okay.
So they're lucky they've got Irish and English from birth. Now they're both studying French. And they're both on the spectrum with regards to exemptions. And it was suggested immediately, they can drop Irish. And I was like, well, are they dropping French as well or why just Irish? But it is part of the kind of common thing that people drop Irish automatically, and it does not make any sense. Because A, they're subjected to more Irish in their daily life than they are French or German.
True,
so it's going
to
be easier for them to learn. And okay, maybe German and Spanish are more phonetic, but French definitely not. There are way more silent letters in French than there are in Irish.
Okay.
And Irish is our language. French is not our language, you know?
Yeah, point made by Sean there. Good morning, Sinead. Lee Mullen on sound. Mary Elizabeth Bruton is our broadcast coordinator. Producer Al McLaughlin and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Harry Curry. Cozy up with the new arrivals. In-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.